fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Hello, darkness. I had just turned 9 in 1984 when my 19-year-old brother Robert, Bobby, was murdered. He was a pretty great older brother. He taught me how to ride my obnoxiously turquoise blue bike, which had a banana seat. Behind the banana seat was a very long white stem that was very flexible and very, very long. At the end of that stem was a safety orange-colored flag waving in the breeze. I don't remember if the flag was something I wanted or a clever plot of my mother's to keep tabs on me. I was allowed to do whatever I wanted to do just as long as I was equipped to not be raped or murdered. My memory seems to recall my mom seeing that the kids were abducted somewhere in the country on their bikes in a van or something. Her thought was that if I had a giant banana seat and a flagpole, it made snatching me rather challenging. She did remind me, as early as I can remember, that the benefit of being small is that you're closer to a person's crotch. If someone dares to try to grab you, just aim right at their crotch with everything you've got. My brother would also play little people with me in my mom's flower beds. When I was a kid, the Fisher-Price sets were sort of wood. The little people were a bit round and all roughly about the same size, so that they fit into these little play sets and cars, similar to Lego, only much larger than Legos. Possibly more difficult to swallow for kids. I remember when I was 6 years old, we watched Mount St. Helens erupt from our backyard in Oregon. It was incredible. My mom had been really following the debate since there was a huge one. Quite a few people were convinced the mountain was not going to erupt, or that it had already done it with a very small eruption. And that morning was crazy, just the sonic boom alone. For weeks after, everything was covered constantly in ash. My brother Bobby and other teens shoveling the ash into piles. One was on the side of our house. We put some in my mom's flower beds, making roads for my little people cars, which were great. When I was 8, I came home embarrassed that a boy a few years older was threatening me and picking on me. The years prior, I beat up a boy slightly younger who was biting all my friends. My mom later told me that she expected for certain that this kid's parents were going to show up at our house or the police, because apparently I lured him into the backyard and beat him up pretty bad. The new bully was much bigger than me, though, and usually had friends with him because, of course, he did. It's amazing how much tougher everyone is when they have one extra person or an audience to perform for. My brother marched down the street to tell the kid, on his lawn, and his friends, that he'd personally end him or any of his friends if they said a single unkind word in the direction of his little sister again. After hugging me and saying that he'd never let anyone hurt me, he taught me how to box, just in case I needed to protect myself. For the record, I learned how to box before I learned how to ride a bike. The bully and his friends attacked the twin girls who lived across the street from my house. They were a couple years younger than me, and it was said that a gang of bullies stripped off both the twins' clothing in their front yard. It was very weird, and it was all anyone was ever talking about. My mom even came home from work and said that she had heard people talking about it. She was asking if I knew the twins or the kids who did all that. I just said I had heard about it and that the boys were jerks and bullied everyone. Of course, no one said why the twins were in their front yard with no one hearing the screaming that was said to have happened during the incident. My mom said this was beyond bullying, and clearly those kids were trying to sexually assault those girls. It was weeks before that kid threatened me again. The week my brother died, I was trying to take a walk, and he crossed my path, saying that my brother wasn't around to protect me anymore. I stood there listening until he punched me straight in my breast. I punched him back as hard as I could, and I left him screaming. I marched straight home. While entering the house, I told my mom that I took care of the bully down the street. When she asked what I meant by took care of, I explained that I punched him as hard as I could, straight into his dick. She looked at the blackening bruise on my chest. His parents did drop by, and I could hear my mother lose her mind screaming at the nerve that he had. Basically, that their child was clearly working on becoming a rapist. They seemed to be at the door forever. She went into graphic detail about his lead assault on the twins across the street, as if she was there and saw the whole thing happen herself. She was very angry about the whole thing, which was sort of relieving and helped me feel better again. When my brother died, it was like I didn't exist for a while. I didn't want to be home since everything around the house, including my mom, who was shut down, was just a reminder that Bobby was never coming home. I grew up living in the era of the mysterious, creepy white van. It seemed like everyone, every night on the news, was reporting assaults, rapes, and child abductions done by what was described as a creepy guy with a sketchy white van. We were constantly, as kids, sharing with each other the various ways our parents would tell us nightly that we were about to be murdered by some guy driving a white van, likely dressed like something evil that couldn't be trusted, like a clown or Ronald Reagan. By all means, don't take candy from strangers. I was convinced for a while that the ice cream man, that truck of his, yeah, he was hiding dead kids in the back, that weird little truck. We kept getting shown weird videos at school about not standing too close to train tracks because there was a lot of railroad crossings near where the kids at school lived. I was programmed to believe that if I went anywhere near a train, that I would surely lose a limb because there's always a random metal strap holding the timber being transported. They'll come loose and cut off your limbs. I was already paranoid thanks to the snuff-level weird films that they'd make us watch during class assemblies. But a friend's cousin walked in front of a train to end their life. A small group of us that overheard what really happened to my friend's family member were even more freaked out when the movie Stand By Me came out. I watched that movie when it came out, not knowing what it was about, and I still can't watch it again. It was also unhelpful that the song was always playing somewhere as if it was haunting us. Perverts were everywhere. And in one of those better to laugh at than cry moments, we as kids would laugh about it. One of the kids at school had someone in, no kidding, a sketchy white van try to pick them up. Several of the kids in my class were actually saying to each other that they thought the kid made it up to get attention.
My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
We were in the 80s, though. I knew guys who would shoot each other with their BB rifles for zero reasons. Thinking back, and a lot of the time period felt like the Wild West. There was that day that some random guy came up, sat next to me and my friend on a park bench. We would go on long walks to other schools and parks all the time, just taking a break, watching sports happening in the park. A few minutes later, he sat down next to her. She suddenly grabbed my arm and indicated I should look over her. When I looked past her, I saw that he's got his junk out and was very aggressively masturbating. When I realized that he was now making direct eye contact with me, and clearly the drive was to freak out the two very young girls as part of his perversion, I grabbed her by the hand and left swiftly while he was shouting something at us. I don't care to remember what. I wonder if there's a lot of these nowadays. According to the emails from Nextdoor, people are walking while black, playing in a park wearing all black, or they are gasped teenagers and someone is clutching her pearls, just knows that they did something sometime, somewhere. Their neighbor two doors down got home late, so they just know he's doing drugs. Or if they have to hear dogs barking next to the dog park at the end of the street anymore, they'll start calling the police again. When I was a child, our neighborhood seemed to get the random pervert here and there, like the random night that I was in bed and heard a commotion in the living room. It was down the hall and around the corner from my room. Creaking around the corner, I gave a side glance to my mother, who was under the coffee table with our large olive green rotary phone. These were pretty great in the 80s, and I feel like we didn't appreciate them enough. Ours had a ridiculously long cord from the phone to the wall so that you could drag it from the living room to the dining room or dining room to the living room. It usually lived in the living room along with the rest of us. That giant, very weighty phone allowed a person to have a heavy weapon while dialing 911. Many conversations the parents would have would end with a loud, almost bell sound when properly slamming down the receiver. This was one of the first moments I ever saw my mother give any sign of weakness. She was petrified, and I kept staring in awe that she was actually under our coffee table, especially since much of its top was glass. I was looking to see if the ceiling was caving in, and I was really tired. I was reaching hard, trying to connect in my mind what she was doing. Then she saw me in the hallway and started waving me to go back to the safety of my room. She also got louder on her phone call, realizing that I was awake and she had probably been trying to not wake me up. I was trying to register why she was waving me to go back into my room. Was there an issue in the living room? So, of course, I walked further into the living room. I was standing right in the center of the picture window, which looked out into our backyard. It was very dark outside, but the moonlight was illuminating the bare ass cheeks of some random man not wearing even socks. I was pretty impressed because this was winter in Oregon. We still, eons later, get very few days which are below freezing, but it was still pretty cold and wet outside. I had school the next day, and I was personally doubling my socks to walk to school. This guy had all of his parts out without even wearing a hat, so I figured he must be very cold. My mom, realizing that I was learning a few things I probably could have done without, and am now actively watching this random guy staring at the moon and going to town on himself. She went into psycho mom mold. She almost leapt from under the coffee table. Now she was going to war to protect her child from the backyard pervert. While still holding the rotary phone, she rushed past the dining room to the sliding glass door at the back of our house, immediately yelling for him to get out of our yard. The guy seemed very happy that my mother was speaking to him. I was frozen, still against the far living room wall, staring out the huge back window. He turned towards my mom, smiling brightly while stroking himself vigorously. When he said to my mom, "Look at me," she screamed, slammed the door shut, and as if on cue, a flood of police officers entered our backyard with their flashlights all aimed at him. No judgment at all to my parents. They let me stay up really late. A lot. And we'd watch Saturday Night Live. And Benny Hill. The shows with a lot of humor not considered appropriate for kids, I was allowed to watch just about anything, really. My mom wasn't into horror movies, but she loved science fiction, so I grew up watching stuff like Alien. She was very against me watching things like Flashdance and tore into a friend's mom when she learned that I'd watched it at a slumber party. Her issue with it was that it was glorifying being a stripper. My mom had zero issues with sex workers, but she felt that the narrative was deceptive for a child. She really wasn't wrong, since Alex, aka Jennifer Beals, is this amazing dancer who's a welder and a stripper, supports herself and her dog in this crazy cool warehouse loft. It does have a bit about the bad club where the girls get completely naked and addicted to drugs, but the better club, they would do actual dancing wearing cool clothes and only strip down to their underwear. I really didn't care what her job was. I was there for cool dancing and the soundtrack. I could have watched Satan's Cheerleaders or just about anything as long as the women were empowered and did not have a message to try to land a man to support you. But cheeky humor was always on the table, and we watched Benny Hill Show every time it was on. Watch one episode on YouTube and you'll appreciate the show. The iconic ending to every episode, always with Benny Hill, was dressed in his punchline costume each week as like a grandmother, French maid, uniform of some kind. Many times a policeman. I have a memory dressed of him dressed as a pirate, but that might not be real. He'd always be on the run, trying to escape from numerous women and men in various cheeky states of undress, also in drag or uniforms. Maybe a few British police officers wearing the uniforms up top and heels and garter belts down below. And for full effect, the ending would speed up their running back and forth across the screen frantically, set to Boots Randolph's hit song, Yakety Sax. Each week's crescendo finish was what everyone was waiting for after being set up during the whole episode. When the police joined the backyard party, I witnessed, I could hear Boots Randolph's Yakety Sax in my head. It got louder and louder.
My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Because the weather took a turn, as it usually does in Oregon, when you step out thinking that it's a clear night, and it started pouring, making all the cops slide, some fall. The naked guy, who did not disappoint or lose an ounce of enthusiasm, was still masturbating while leading what looked like a pretty ridiculous amount of police back and forth across my yard. There were pretty high fences on both sides of the backyard, so they were doing circles for what seemed like forever. My mom kept begging me to please stop watching this mess and go to bed. Are you kidding? This is gold medal TV right here. I was only missing popcorn. The next day, she chose to drive me to school. And the whole drive, she was asking over and over again, please tell no one what happened. It had seemed like just a few minutes ago. And in reality, it was just a few hours before. My parents were convinced that Child Protective Services were in a van at the end of every neighborhood street, just waiting to hear about some weirdness, like a rando, enthusiastically masturbating guy, so they could come take your kids away, since it must be your fault. We never spoke of that night again. I think I tried to bring it up at a gathering at our house to my parents' friends. My mom shut that down really fast. As a teenager, the random perverts that I'd encounter were mostly the ones in downtown Portland. They'd wear trench coats to the bus mall. It was this section, right at the heart of downtown, along the two streets which went opposite directions, to head to the other side of Portland, over the Willamette River, or through the West Hills, towards the southwest suburbs. The flashers were pretty lame, though, versus half the police department chasing some naked fella through my backyard. It sounds a bit odd to say this, but I didn't get as much of a pervert gaze as a kid. I actually developed pretty young, so I was an hourglass figure with actual TNA. Friends assumed that I had to deal with sleazy older men, but no, because I couldn't hide my curves. With all the terrible daily feed of people having engaged in large volume of child porn and sex trafficking children, I'm also seeing a lot more people coming out and stating that no wonder we were fed a barrage of impossible beauty standards, because clearly these people were attracted to young children who were not developed. A meme online I came across recently stated, "It's really weird thinking about how I grew up as a kid who didn't fit the beauty standards of Abercrombie and Fitch, Hollister and Victoria's Secret, and hated myself and my body. I felt so ugly and spent years dealing with the fallout of never feeling like I was beautiful, only to suddenly be confronted with the fact that it was all run and designed by a bunch of pedophiles." My mom was even more protective of me after my brother Bobby died. Well, eventually she was, months after. I grew up with a lot of death, and I've had quite a few friends ask me questions, usually trying to navigate their own grief. I start by giving them permission to be mad about it. Many times I'd find myself almost wanting to hit people, because people are even more exhausting to talk to when you've lost someone close to you. Everyone wants to tell you something profound or helpful, like, "I know exactly what you're going through," even though they likely have no idea at all. I personally have lost a ridiculous amount of people, but how would I know an ounce of what you personally are experiencing? To try to tell you is just not helpful or even remotely accurate. It also feels to me cocky. The people who insist on speaking with me are many times the last person who should speak to anyone. Although, let's be real here, and the people who are in the first to jump up offering advice or clarity in that situation, or any situation, are likely the last person who should open their mouth about most everything. Hearing people come to tell my mother that her 19-year-old son was probably in a better place. Yikes. Who hurt you? Wow. I was gagged because I couldn't believe the audacity of what people will say to other people while they're grieving, even as a child who is not supposed to know anything. I think people who don't get punched in the face more often, it's probably because the person listening to the idiocy that they just said is so broken that they lack the energy to even process it, let alone react. I personally would play back in my brain, sometimes days later, the long list of, "Did that fool seriously tell me I'll eventually get over it? Who the hell says that? I get that you're trying to help. Can you please, please, please not help me? Just tell me you're sorry, I'm hurting, and walk away." Even if the person who passes was suffering extreme pain from a horrific illness and you feel like it was a mercy that they passed, please keep your feelings on that to yourself, because the loss is not about you. After seeing far too much death before I was a teenager, I just try to stick with as little as possible, mostly focusing on, "I am so sorry. They will be missed, and can I do something for you?" Just keep remembering, in most situations, it is not about you. When you're offering to do something for a person grieving, be specific. Otherwise, adding to their pile, which is likely already overwhelming, they're probably drowning. Let's just say that you bought them a plant to honor their loved one. "May I stop by with some pastries in a few days and help plant this for you?" Then you call and message them. Don't make the person reach out to you like most people do. Maybe say, "I know you must be overwhelmed. May I bring some takeout to you later this week?" I don't have to stay unless you'd like some company. Later in my life, I had some friends really show up like that. Sometimes I took them up on their offer for dinner or a movie. Having a night where friends give you permission to enjoy life is the best hug ever. Many people treat you like you're supposed to stop living because you've suffered a loss, when you really could use a reminder that you still have wonderful people in your life and that you need to keep living it. If anything, live for the loved one you lost. Even these days, it's not typical that you'll encounter a 9-year-old little girl who lost her brother to murder. Though I was told I lost my brother to an auto accident. It was suspect from the start, since there were no details. I was old enough at 9 to get the concept of death, but young enough that adults forget that you're present and also have feelings. It also might not have helped that I was taught how to get myself food and water. I loved eating Fruit Loops or Corn Flakes for my meals all day. I was fine with that. So I wasn't asking for anything but milk. Later, I realized how much I actually looked like my brother, which explains why my mom had a pretty tough time looking at me. My brother died June 4th, so I got to suffer through a few more weeks of school. My mom was a wreck. I remember when she got the call in the middle of the night. I don't know who called or why they called. I just know that I woke up to the sound of her crying in the living room after that phone call. I crept down the hall and around the corner. Hearing the creak in the floor, she swiveled the burnt orange velvet chair in my direction. She just stared at me while uncomfortably crying. She was completely uncontrollably sobbing. My dad, also hearing me, led me back to my room, explaining that Bobby was not coming home. It felt like he was gone less than a week, having left to visit some friends in California a few days before. I was already confused by the car accident tale, since I thought he flew to California and my dad made it sound like he drove there. And it happened during the drive there. When I asked if anyone else was hurt, or if his friends were with him, I was told to go to sleep. Any questions I asked were quickly shut down. In addition, my sister came up from her apartment in Salem. Normally, she wanted to talk to me, but she just seemed to be competing with me over who knew Bob better. It was weird. Losing my brother, but the conversations that would cease when I would enter a room. It sounded like the accident was suspicious, so I would ask questions, which made them seem mad about it. I would get told to go play. My mother and my sister left for California to get my brother's cremains. They came back to Oregon, but left shortly after to visit my older brother, Rick. Well, my oldest brother, Rick. At his place in North Lake Tahoe, on the Nevada side of the lake. They spent weeks spreading his cremains in the lake, and they'd call me to tell me how much fun they were having. I think that they were trying to be kind, but it felt like mockery when I was told I was too young to go to anything involving my brother's memorial. And I didn't even know at the time that I was being completely lied to by everyone. In between the trips, my mom took her Corolla to California and then Nevada. She tried to be buddies. She'd roll back into town and suddenly offer to drive me and my friends to go roller skating. This was great, until I was complaining about the box wedged under my mom's seat in the car. It was cramping my leg room during the voyage to Skate World. My giant Esprit bag with my roller skates already took up way too much room next to me on the pleather back seat. I started kicking immediately, demanding to know why this stupid box was in my way. My mom asked me to please stop kicking my brother. I then spotted the label with his name on it and the name of the funeral home. I never asked for a ride again. Although it was not long after that that my mom and sister did the drive to Lake Tahoe, and I never saw that box again. In my early 20s, I finally traveled to Lake Tahoe during a family reunion of sorts with my boyfriend. I really did like his family a lot. His grandparents had access to an amazing cabin near the south side of the lake, on the Nevada side, close to where I'm pretty certain my mom had released my brother. I rode a boat around the whole lake with bottomless champagne the first day that we were there. It was the day after we arrived. Thankfully, I was young and resilient because I learned an important lesson driving to Lake Tahoe. I learned how many yards I can projectile vomit when I get something called elevation sickness. I had already put a dent in a tree when releasing everything I'd eaten since the 90s. But then my boyfriend's older brother just had to show us the cabins that a few of them were staying in. I did not agree to the terms of the drive that I really wished they had left me to die on the side of the road. Lake Tahoe does not hold its heat. So I went from being uncomfortably warm to being locked in a fridge. Either way, the air was just not moving. When I asked his brother for a window crack, I was refused due to the cold outside. I talked very low and slow to avoid upsetting whatever cosmic breach was occurring in my stomach. I said I need air, a breeze, in fact. Friends, when a person suggests that they could use a breeze, I feel no one will ever mean from a heater. But that's exactly what he turned on at full blast. And to make it even better, he angled every vent towards my face. As if to completely seal my fate, he added Metallica at tinnitus-inducing volume. When he finally skidded into the parking lot of these cabins, I slowly crawled out of the car. I can remember I felt far better when allowed to lose consciousness later that night. A day before our last day in Lake Tahoe, I managed to time myself while I was up to my waist in the cool water, telling my boyfriend or his family that my brother had been added to the lake a decade prior and that this was my first opportunity to see him. I was on the family vacation, not my family, my boyfriend's family, but I did have a good time, and we were there with quite a few older and less agile family members. Our hike around the lake was stopping the van that we were in and looking out, because we were stopping by several casinos. Gambling's not really my thing. I did have a weird goal to drop a coin into each casino along their version of the strip. Me and my boyfriend did exactly that, and thanks to my winning a bunch and managing to keep his paws from losing more and more of my winnings, I had enough to get us dinner, drinks, and a few souvenirs at the last casino, which during that time was Planet Hollywood. I was driving and decided to make my boyfriend the designated drinker so that I could try a sip and move on to a Coke. My choice was the Terminator. We were laughing at the description, saying, hasta la vista, baby. My boyfriend drank the pink-colored pint glass that we watched the bartender create. He dropped it in seconds. It was worth the money just to watch that guy pouring it, because there had to have been 20 different bottles of booze that contributed to it. I will say that my ex saying he just felt the left side of his head go numb before ordering another will tell you why no one drives themselves in Lake Tahoe. When my mom came back from Nevada, she had some shore sand, which my brother Rick had put in a container for me. I treasured it until a random friend stole it out of my room.
My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
That makes me more mad as an adult than when I was experiencing it as a child. I also lost at some point the jars of Mount St. Helens ash that my brother had stored in our garage from when I was six, and we had watched the eruption together, when I was so scared but comforted knowing my brother was there to protect me. My brother died at the beginning of June, so I was still in school. A few hours after finding my mom crying in the living room, I had to walk myself to school. The teachers were as awkward and truly 80s as you can imagine. I've since seen several movies where a kid is hiding in the bathroom stall from the other kids. I did that a few times just for quiet. Some of the times I felt the most alone were when I was surrounded by other people. This was definitely one of those times. I was almost happy to not be home. Though, you know, because watching my mom cry like that was painful, and I just wanted to act normal, like nothing was wrong. I was in my homeroom class, sitting at my table in the far back. We did not have desks, but we had these large tables that they had arranged oddly so that we could sit around them, and that they were all mostly attached at weird angles, so that all the kids were sort of together. Early years of elementary school felt more like craft projects versus learning. Everything seemed to involve elbow macaroni, like a hate crime. The teacher started talking when I realized she was using my name a lot. She said over and over that my brother has died and that everyone needed to be extra nice to me so that I would not feel alone. I was mortified as I started realizing that everyone was now staring at me like I was about to get up and start a dance routine or do something performative. I'd already wanted to be invisible, and now I wanted to jump under the table. A fun fact about death is that as a survivor, after losing someone close to you, people stare at you, waiting for you to drop or perform in some way for them. They wait for you, trying to figure out what to say or waiting for your lead. It really does feel performative, and I can tell you that there's no right or wrong way to grieve. even more fun is people who act mad at you for being upset or going through it. Death many times brings out the worst behaviors in people because they're afraid. Like it's a disease that they might catch. Or how dare you affect them like that? Many people present anger without even realizing it. This is something that I learned at 9 years old, which is very confusing at 9 years old. People want details, so they ask questions that sound a bit like demands. I wanted a close friend. I mentioned a close friend passed away to another friend just last week. That person caught themselves because they were clearly embarrassed. I had barely said that my friend had passed when the friend blurted out, "What happened?" before the condolences or acknowledgement that I was greatly affected, which is why I had mentioned it at all, to state that I was having a pretty challenging week and perhaps I wasn't being myself. Dying's rough business for everyone involved. A very strange thing happened to me after the teacher humiliated me in front of my classmates. I made a friend. Well, she told me we were friends. A very sweet girl who sat on the other side of the classroom from me and that I had never spoken to previously marched right to where I was sitting when we got back from our break. She stood at my side, shook my hand like she just sold me life insurance. The best were her words, declaring, "Hi, my name's Beth, and we're friends now." Spoiler alert, 40 years later, we're still friends. Conveniently, we learned that we lived a block away from each other, and this made my summer far better since I needed to not be home as often as possible that year. Her wonderful mom, who I also still love and adore, also introduced me to the best thing a kid could ever want, a casserole. With two parents checked out from parenting for a bit, including that their kid was eating, I really loved going over to their house for dinner nearly every night. Beth also had a waterbed, which we would set to hot springs temperatures, even with her flannel sheets. I loved recess. What kid doesn't? I was very good at double dutch, which is pretty difficult jump roping in a group game. We had a sizable group, mostly ladies, who would jump through the whole recess unless it was too wet outside and the covered area didn't have enough room for us. I also really liked wall ball. And although I was very short for my age, I was pretty great at it. At least I was in my mind. I remember, even in my 20s, when quite a few friends joined adult dodgeball groups, they tried to get me to do it. I saw the red brick colored rubber balls, and I'd smile, remembering that I would play fiercely as often as I could, even bruising my wrists just from serving the ball. But dodgeball wasn't my thing. Bravo to all you who kept fiercely dodging balls as adults. And a shout out to Rip Torn in the movie Dodgeball for giving us the sage advice that if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. It belongs in the Hagar, the way of the samurai. On the wall ball court, we'd get a bit aggressive. Getting hit when properly thrown, these balls were properly colored brick red. It did feel like a brick. Playing wall ball did not usually involve getting hit by the ball. I remember many times bruising my wrists pretty badly, which meant double dutch for recess for days at a time. A lot of the drama would happen near the wall ball court, though. Double dutch was a lot more mellow with us, cheering each other and chanting the various sayings with the person jumping and the girls swinging the ropes. It was rhythmic and focused. The wall ball area was grade school cartel situation. A nerdy kid once was talked to very sternly before being sent home because he was selling chalk dust. and telling everyone it was cocaine. Yes, we were hardcore street. The rumor was that Indian Hills Elementary was improperly put on an indigenous burial ground. So there were always the stories where someone saw a hole dug anywhere near the school and said that it was someone digging for bones. Children seemed to love an Indiana Jones moment. A few days after my brother died, I earned a pretty bad rep. I kept the reputation through most of my grade school career. It took years for me to have kids stop randomly mentioning how I taught a boy a few years older not to underestimate a girl he towered over. The day started with the normal ghosting I was getting by most of the kids in my class that I thought were my friends. I remember that I hid in the bathroom to cry for a bit. It was just awkward. Like, hey, so my brother died yesterday? Like the teacher said. Read any good books lately? If I walked near anyone, they would scatter or get silent and stare at me. I remembered as a kid, we'd share things at random with each other. Like one of my friends would say that they learned to fold their tongue and would show us. Then another friend would say, did you know that you can do a lot of damage to a person with a wall ball? The key to a good wall ball for a wall, you know, for an actual match, was a slightly deflated ball, giving the perfect weight and bounce. For dodgeball, they'd fill them a lot more since you were actively throwing them at each other, and the last thing you'd want to do is hurt the person that you were throwing the ball at. So you wanted it to bounce off. Well, if you grabbed a slightly deflated wall ball with your fist, you could hold it, and it was very hard, like a brick. The last game of wall ball that I was ever allowed to play was about 2 days after my brother died. The game began like normal. We line up, taking turns playing, just waiting for one of the two people playing to win. The loser goes to stand behind the lines of kids waiting for their next turn, and the person at the front enters the court area to start that round. I figured I'd just play the game. Try to pretend things are normal during recess. Two groups down was a jerk and his awful striped shirt and khaki corduroys, dominating his usual wall ball group. You remember that kid you swear was held back in everything but height? Serious neck cramp if you tried to make eye contact, and he was always running his mouth about something. He also was infamous for fighting. I knew he was at least 1 or 2 years older than me. I went 2 rounds of wall ball with my group, and then I became aware that he was talking about me to his wall ball group. He kept getting louder and louder, and I think he was just trying to get me to hear him. He was always trying to embarrass someone, and today was my turn. Today's idiocy was him saying that I'd murdered my brother, and that he was shocked that they allowed me back at school. I was wearing a red Coca-Cola shirt, and my shoes had red on them. So he was ridiculously saying that I had blood on me. Look at all that red she's wearing. It was an example of things kids say that go against the fabric of actual reality. I'd say that it gets better with adults, but I'd be lying. If anything, adults are worse. I'm a person who does not, well, I believe in using your words to resolve conflict. I truly. But that day, I was done already before I got to school. His words flicked an internal murder switch. I found myself taking flight, kind of like an out-of-body experience, because somehow I was suddenly sitting on his chest, smacking his face over and over with a wall ball. Yes. That ball really did feel like I was wielding a brick at his head. I don't remember blood, but I think it was a teacher who removed me from him. My memory fades out of the playground and into the principal's office, where I recall it being suggested to my dad that the unhinged child, which would be me, stay home to mourn with their family. The last few weeks of school are just recreation in grade school, since grades have already been completed for everyone. Teachers were just doing craft activities and offering extra recess periods, getting all the kids properly ready for their school vacations. It was a day or two later when some friends dropped by to grab me so that we could all walk to the treehouse. When I say treehouse, okay, throughout the area I grew up in were strange spaces. Much of the area is swampland and natural wetlands. Neighborhoods would build rows of houses, and in between their backyard fences were random sections of ground that were swamp, or that construction crews would add some extra pipes in to drain off the backyards in the wetland spaces. Sometimes people would put their kids' play sets into the spaces, figuring that it was why take up yard space of their own. Sometimes you'd pass by a swing set that was half sunk into the ground. Swampland is a very strange surface. The treehouse was a wooden platform that someone had added to a tree that had pretty much collapsed. The area was quite long, but had a drop-off right after the tree base. Most of the tree sort of fell as a platform, growing almost sideways, and then the actual platform was right on top of that tree. Under and beneath the platform was blackberry bramble. I had to set the scene that I walked into with my friend group. I was just walking with friends to hang out with more friends. When we arrived, all I saw standing on the platform was the much taller than me kid, the trash talker. I swear he was wearing the same outfit from a few days prior. The only difference was that he was now sporting a large bandage over his nose with a lot of bruising surrounding it from my assault on the wall ball court just a day or two prior. I found out much later that one of his friends brought him so that he could apologize to me. I did not get that memo. And they might have based Martin Riggs from Lethal Weapon on me, because in my 9-year-old logic, I was determined to dispatch that kid. I was holding him completely responsible as if he was the car that ran my brother over. I stopped in my tracks for a second after seeing him, and then I started running like I was a torpedo locking on to him. There was no plan, no thought at all. I feel like I was trying to run through him. When I hit him, we flew together until we landed into the center of the blackberry bramble. With those words, blackberry bramble, my skin feels it immediately. We didn't want to be anywhere near each other, but we were engulfed immediately, and the pile of blackberries was surrounding us. The more we struggled, the more it would dig in and wrap. And I lost track of which one of us was screaming louder, but after a bit, we just became silent and still. We were exhausted. I think we both just sniveled with our tears, and it took hours to cut us out of the mattress of pain. There were quite a few adults whose houses surrounded the tree houses who came out hearing the commotion. They were familiar with the kids grouping at.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
The treehouse, but our dual screams were new for them. I remembered hearing one of them ask stupid questions like, why did you do that? As if we had made the decision to land on top of the bramble. They all were discussing concerns about cutting each branch tangle, since we were suspended pretty far off of anything resembling the ground, and if they cut too much under us, our weight would bring us down at a painful rate. When we were finally free, I limped home, and after showering the blood off, I later needed to confess a bit of what happened to my parents. I'm highly allergic to spiders, their webs, their hairs, and their bites. Blackberries are filled with spiders and their webs. I don't think I was bit, but most of my arms and legs were covered in cuts and then covered in spider webs. The cuts were aggravated enough without that irritant rubbed into them, but my skin was swelling pretty badly thanks to the allergy. So I got to spend a couple more hours in the ER with my parents. The next school year, I remembered that he and I looked at each other from across the schoolyard, maybe once on the first day without any emotion behind it. We nodded like we're not going to talk about this. We fought our fight. I do not recall ever talking to him before the entire thing happened or after the entire thing happened. What was there to say? You said some garbage 2 days after my brother died. I got upset, broke your nose, tried to break you as a person. We bled together and were forced to hug for hours. Let's move on. I don't remember him running his mouth after that. Friends have said to me that they don't like picking blackberries because they might get a cut or two, which makes me laugh. I still love blackberries. Another happening on the very first day of school the next year was being told that I was not allowed to play wall ball. Again. Yes, the little girl a few years younger and much shorter than the bully was ordered to quit that sport. They spoke to me like I was a troublemaker and a bully, to where I thought that they were joking. And as they continued to use words like violent and aggression. It's pretty funny, since I'm a pretty peaceful person. I just did the childish, sure, whatever, and stuck with double dutch as my go-to for recess, complaining, what else could you grind up and sell as coke on the wall ball court? My mom was pretty checked out and obsessed for quite a while. She traveled through California trying to question all my brother's friends, which I didn't understand. He was in an accident, so what did she need to talk to his friends for? She and my sister talked about bringing my brother's death to a show that first started in 1985 called Missing. Have you seen this person? Many of the episodes were murder cases versus missing persons, so the series eventually became Unsolved Mysteries. My sister and mom would talk about it, but then stop talking when I'd ask, what was unsolved about a car accident? I played dress-up in my mom's closet all the time, by myself or with friends, sometimes by myself. She had a drawer full of really nice wigs, and we'd have a lot of fun. One day during one of the dress-up sessions with my friend, I found a large manila envelope hidden under all the wigs. Of course I opened it. I was 10 years old. This was officially the first time I was seeing any police case file. I felt like I was in an episode of Barnaby Jones. Between him and Perry Mason, I knew all about law in my 10-year-old child mind. I recognized my brother's name, but I didn't know what the terms mechanical asphyxia or ligature strangulation meant. I wandered over to the giant Webster Dictionary and the much more helpful books on anatomy and medical reference guide off my parents' office shelves. Both my parents read a ridiculous amount. One of the walls in their home office was covered in books up to the ceiling. There were also stacks of new ones all the time. As I tried to understand how Bobby's car accident had caused what the report said was neck compression, I was certain that he must have had a neck injury, but didn't understand why there was no mention of the car accident, and I kept looking through the report. A much smaller manila envelope fell into my lap. I had not seen my brother's face in almost a year. The first photos were of a field, a meadow with the sun crisp, tall grass, and a clear blue sky. Flipping through each photo brought the photographer closer to a tree in the meadow. And as the photographer got closer, you could tell it was a very tall person. Even closer, and I realized that the tall person was several feet off the ground, suspended from a tree. My friend with me was asking a lot of questions as I silently just dropped photo after photo, realizing I knew the shirt Bobby was wearing and that he was the person hanging suspended from the tree because there was a rope around his neck. His hair seemed longer than I remembered. The rope was wrapped twice around the large branch that he was hanging from, and the rope led to the other side of the tree where it was tied with a knot on an opposing large branch. His hands were tied behind his back. There was a cooler on a park bench, lots of varied footprints around him. Nearly a decade later, my dad told me that he still felt terrible for lying to me because he and my mom thought that I would not understand. The police ruled my brother's death as a suicide. The police had not questioned a single person. His hands were tied behind his back with an elaborate nautical knot, with no sign of something he would have needed to stand on, except the cooler, which was found sitting on the seat portion of the picnic bench. There was also no note. He was identified because someone he was staying with had put in a missing persons report, and that person referred to the police to my mom, who had to do the official identification. They gave my mom all my brother's stuff, but I don't think they ever recovered his wallet, which was also not at the scene. My brother was a musician, and his very brief time in the army, which ended thanks to flat feet. Unfortunately, I managed to destroy his acoustic guitar versus learning how to play it. I remember him trying to teach me some notes. My mother never recovered the electric guitar that he had just purchased before his trip, though she tried very hard. His poor duffel bag from the army suffered greatly from my use. When I went to outdoor school with it packed in the sixth grade, it was the topic of conversation among my classmates. I don't think my mom ever let go of her desire to solve his death. I think she learned to hide it. I was relieved when she seemed to stop obsessing about clues that she would find going through another round, trying to contact everyone who had come into contact with Bobby at any point. She had a drawer full of his random belongings. She was convinced each meant something. In some way, it seemed like it was her way of holding on to him. I went from playing with dolls to never wanting to have a child. I admit I was really angry with my mom for quite a few years. I felt like I had to remind her that she had more than just Bobby. He was my best friend and spent more time with me than anyone, yet my sister would always make a point that she was closer to him. I felt very alone. People are always closer to somebody after they've died. I informed my parents that I was upset at their elaborate ruse about my brother's death with surgical skill. They had a room which was the home office. I mostly remembered the very tall shelving full of books I described before. My dad was fascinated with medical knowledge, so I grew up reading a lot of weird things. The great thing about being a kid is that your mind really is a sponge. I also had a real desire to be like my dad, who would answer Jeopardy questions from the kitchen while cooking dinner for us. As we would shout out, "No, really, how do you know that the Simbu skeleton tribe is from Papua New Guinea? And that Thomas Newcomen invented the first practical atmospheric steam engine in 1712, which was enhanced with James Watt's condenser in 1765. As dinner was being served one fine evening, I brought the file clearly showing that there were no vehicles present in the field where my brother was found. It was my Sherlock Holmes moment. Around the same time period, I brought home a book report grade for review. I think my parents and their friends laughed for about 20 minutes solid. As a child of 10, I did a book report on The Black Death, a biological reappraisal, which delves into the argument that the bubonic plague was originally thought to have been spread by rats and fleas, because during that time period, the climate and ecology, it couldn't have supported it. Instead, the author proposed that it was caused by anthrax, as it can be airborne and spreads quickly, just like that plague had. I remember my sweet teacher's note, which said, "Wow, I thank you for your knowledge on this unique subject." My English teacher the next year was less amused when I moved into writing about the Salem witch trials, suggesting that a student my age might surely find more pleasure in reading fictional works. She made the mistake of bringing that up to my mother, suggesting that my parents were forcing me to read some pretty creepy material. My mom was known for telling off my teachers, and I was grateful that my parents were always on my side. My mom would usually counter that what they would say, suggesting that she didn't understand why they were trying to bring me down to the level of other kids, since clearly I was more advanced reading level-wise. I remember during a parent-teacher conference, her shouting, "Of course she wrote a paper about serial killers." Later, in a private with me, she said, "So you seriously wrote a paper about serial killers?" Well, I guess you got into liking the weird stuff from me. Maybe you should go into forensics. And darkness, I need to pop up on my milk crate for a moment to state a complaint on behalf of me as a juvenile. Lessons taught in the third grade included learning to write in perfect cursive while also playing the Oregon Trail game. My school didn't have the computers for the actual video game, so we had assigned groups, and we'd roll dice and throw cards as to the fate of our wagon train every day to start class. I'm not sure what sociopath added the Oregon Trail to class lessons in Oregon, but our takeaway was that every choice you made during the torturous journey down the Oregon Trail led to dying of dysentery. I'm not joking when I tell you that slowly each member of our wagon would die. And this was after we lost most of our animals to drowning in different rivers or limbs due to accidents with the wagon. I seem to remember my team had half our food lost to improper storage, which also leads to, yes, you guessed it, dysentery. We had to eat our animals. I do not remember a single member of my wagon train, actually in the entire class's trains, actually living. I would like to point out that this is a classic example of things handed to us when we were not even teens, and then teachers would question me handing in book reports about plagues. when approaching, but not quite in junior high yet, I did my science report on alcoholism. I remembered overhearing someone else's mother commenting that at least I was writing about it versus becoming one. When I called my parents out on my brother's death, it was done with a lot of insane vocabulary, feeling that it would strengthen my argument. Instead, I imagine it likely made me sound completely deranged. I was using all new-to-me vocabulary. I very likely lacked the capacity to string the words together appropriately. If I could tell my class graphically that most of my team's wagon train was suffering from dysentery, then I could be told the truth about my brother. It was bad enough that my best friend died, but I really didn't like them acting like they were doing me a favor by lying to me. It felt like I was being treated like I was an idiot. That also became one of the very few ways to completely piss me off. After about 40 years, after over 40 years, I wish I could remember what Bobby's voice sounded like, even though I do hear him. He's always been that feeling for me to go to no matter what. He always told me just to get past whatever it is holding you back. He taught me to ride my bike after I'd given up, convinced that I couldn't possibly do it. Nope, just get up and let's go. But it's getting dark out. So what? You won't have anything distracting you. You can do it. You just need to do it. And I did it. It's also one of the many reasons I know that he didn't take his own life. I don't need to know who did it. It took many years for me to replace the image in my head of my brother. I have so few photographs of him. In 1984, Polaroid cameras were starting to get popular, but the film was pretty expensive. I focused on erasing the image of my brother's police photos from my mind and replacing them with the picture my mom took of us right before my brother went on his trip that he told me that he'd be back from. My point is that I much prefer remembering my brother's face and not whoever took his life. That might even be worse than the crime scene photos, which will always be there deep down. I will conclude my entry into the darkness, just reminding myself to be good or be good at it.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.